Pick up mama, there's a white boat coming down the river with a big red beacon and a flag and a man on the rail. I think you better call John, 'cause it don't look like they're here to deliver. And it's less than a mile away. I hope they didn't come to stay. It's got numbers on the side and a gun, and it's making big waves.
I just want to quickly start out by just talking about where we are, because in my four seasons of running this blog and being engaged in the fandom in this way, there has definitely never been this level of sadness, upset, and I think general needing to talk to someone-ness that's surrounded this episode. And so how's everyone doing? Cynthia, how are you doing today?
Today? It was a really bad day. It was a really bad day. and I'm laughing because when one doesn't cry, one laughs. So, and I've done a ton of crying. And I don't, it's weird for me, I guess, because I really, really don't want to intellectualize it, or we can later, but to me...
Let's not intellectualize, because let's be respectful.
Well, but I think it's okay to talk about story writing. I think it's okay to talk about who he was. I think it's okay to talk
I think we should talk about that. I don't think we have to, quote-unquote, rationalize it.
Well, so, but I think that the ask of the 100 some asks we've got today, the one that resonated with me the most was, please don't try to rationalize this. It's just a grief. And I agree.
And I think that's why Sarah chose that word.
Right. And then, no, absolutely. So for me, I don't know, that, like, it was weird, as I said to both of you before we started recording this, like, it's not on the scale of 9/11. It's not on the scale of finding out, you know, I'm getting divorced. It's not on the scale of Hillary losing. But for me, it was a defined death of a character and a show for which I it's not like we weren't warned. It's not like it wasn't kind of written on the like, it was super clear. You can look at hindsight's 2020. They kind of were telling us. They were not shy in how they filmed this on the streets of New York with him being shot twice. Rupert and Claire, I think, were relatively honest in their reactions to things. It's not like we weren't told. We just could not begin to believe it. And I think that's what's I think that is actually what's important to talk about.
I think that's very accurate. As you know, I'll start by saying this feels like deja vu for me personally, because this happened a season ago. I believed fully that he had died and was tasked with having to deal with that in a public way, actually.
I think a lot of enemies.
I was going to say, I think a lot of people would say that I did not, you know, handle that as well as I should have. But this was different. I agree with you, Cynthia. The writing was on the wall. Ashley has said, has been saying week after week, like, he's gonna die. Like, let me explain to you all of the storytelling ways that this was happening. And we could not believe it. And I think the fact that we could not believe it speaks to something larger about who the character was and what he meant to the show, that it seemed unfathomable in the face of mounting evidence and clues that this would happen, that none of us wanted to believe it. And I was very, very firm in just being like, it's not going to fucking happen. Like,
given how much I have stated over the past several weeks that this is going to happen, I am more in denial about it than anybody.
Yeah. I feel, I was shocked and surprised, and I was in shock and not wanting to believe it, but also just being like, this is the story that they're telling? Question mark. And today I'm feeling, a little bit like it doesn't feel real to me yet. Like, I'm not sure that it's really sunken in that this is what's happened. And I also feel kind of like, what now? What are they going to do now? Because I don't know what they're going to do now.
I'm not a crier in general. Like, there's a very big difference for me personally between knowing something to be intellectually true and emotionally being able to fathom it. My mom passed away in 1998, and I remember going to a therapist in 2004 and being like, oh, so I finally get it now. Like, my mom's actually dead. It took me 6 years to get that. I did not cry when she died. It was like, not, it didn't make sense to me, and I'm there right now. It doesn't make sense to me, even though I have been saying this entire fucking time for weeks now. I said to you, in what, episode 5, episode 6, with the whole Conlon thing, I was like, the foreshadowing is there. It's going to happen. And I'm...
Well, so...
I can't accept it.
There's so much to say, and I'm going to start crying again.
Please don't cry.
No, I am. I'm going to cry several times in the next hour or so. And let's just be okay with that, because I'm... It's like, fine. It's just who I am. So first of all, I think that, I think the writing really was on the wall. And I think because we're a bunch of women in this fandom, and because we were so heartened by his being alive after 5/12, we were so sure that that was some kind of confirmation of some kind of everlasting life on Homeland in whatever way. And this is weird. This is so weird, and in the way that life is like this. I had to do this reckoning, which I did text Sarah about today. The moment that I had the most rage at Sarah after 5/12, when she was just running her blog alone, was when she said something, which, by the way, was in the realm of Sarah one-liners, was not so horrible. But to me, after 5/12, she wrote a one-liner in which she said, it's not the story they wanted to tell. And today, I like had this like year and a half later moment where I was like, helping her reply to asks, and there's so many of them. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, she was right. Like, they managed to find a story for him for another year, which they might have thought was meaningful and important, and maybe it was. But his story, vis-a-vis Homeland, whatever they're trying to tell completely, is not the story they wanted to tell. And that is what, that is what is shocking to me. It's shocking to me, and it's not shocking to me, but, you know, I had this moment with my friend, who I will call S, who went to sets with me this year, and she said to me, you know, that
best person on the planet.
She is the best person on the planet, and she met me tonight for drinks hours ago, so I'm actually pretty sober. But she said to me, you know, the problem is, Cynthia, she said, you know what? And I actually really will defend this. She said the reason that the X-Files worked is because Mulder and Scully were better together. And the show was always better together. And for the last two or three seasons of that show, which went on for an interminable 9 years, they were often not together. And it kind of petered out in a sort of dysfunctional way. But the reason the show worked is because they actually energized each other. And so the question, which we can revisit later, is we've always known it's Carrie's show, and we've always known she's a protagonist, but they were both better. She was better together. They were more exciting and interesting. It was a more exciting and interesting story for me. And that's what I've cried about today, is because I feel like there's just a disconnect between, it's not about loving his cheek. Well, I mean, I'm sure for some people it's about loving his cheekbones and Rupert Friend, but it was mostly about how I thought by narrative, they must have understood after 512 that it was just a better story with them together. And that's how that's, and I've cried several times today because I was super fucking surprised.
Yeah. I spent the second half of the episode looking at Sarah saying, he's not dead. He isn't.
Because I kept saying, oh my God, he's dead. Like, he's dead.
And I'm grabbing at Sarah, like, during the episode. She was, like, and you know Sarah's rules.
Yeah.
You know Sarah's rules about watching Homeland. And I'm like,
which are no talking.
Exactly.
Except when I talk.
And I was like, no, he's fine. That makes no sense to me. It makes no narrative sense because
it doesn't make any narrative sense.
And they broke,
like, look,
this whole thing.
That is true. When we say we shouldn't rationalize it, it means we shouldn't try to assign rational, sane logic to a decision that, I will admit, makes no fucking sense.
Rationally, they killed him last season, and they saw the fan backlash, and they just were like
okay, cool, yeah, like, let's bring him back.
Right, exactly. So realistically, they already did this. They already hit this emotional note. And now they're just fucking doing it again. And they're getting a similar reaction, except people are just fucking angry now. They're not sad. They're fucking pissed the fuck off.
People were angry last year, I will say. People were angry last year.
I know, but if...
Angry at the show, angry at me. At me, including Cynthia.
But if Quinn had died last year, at least there would have been...
Look, I think there's...
Earlier today that at least when Quinn died last year... I did air quotes there, guys. when Quinn, quote-unquote, died last year, we got Carrie in his hospital room applying lip balm to him, making sure that he was not going to get bed sores, making sure that he was okay. And we got the voiceover with the letter, and we had this beautiful romantic moment where it was like two people who just did not connect at the right time. And with this, it felt like a fucking robbery.
Really? Okay, so I actually think it's I mean, this conversation is going to go all over the place, but I do think it's a good conversation to have about 512 versus 612, because I raged, and by the way, anyone can find it. I think it's under Langsy on Reddit. I think I have the same Tumblr on Reddit.
No, you don't. Not on Reddit.
Okay.
It is either LeBlanc One.
I don't know what it is on Reddit, but it's not.
It doesn't matter.
It's either Langsy or LeBlanc One. But after 512, I literally, it was 2 a.m. and I was sober. And I think I wrote, like, I don't know, five paragraphs and I was like, this is not fucking cool. You don't. But I guess my overall point is that my biggest issue with 512, oh my God, I'm going to start crying again, is that they rendered a character that was so important and so alive, like weak and horizontal for three episodes and never let him speak, actually in a moment when he could have spoken. And could have said goodbye. And then fine, it's awesome that Ripper Friend wrote the letter and that was sort of lovely. But the question, and it was posed today, was, you know, why not just let him die then? Because this was so fucking horrible. And my position actually is that Leslie directed the episode. It's not the episode that I would have wanted if you were going to kill him, but I feel like he had a hero's departure. And that 1 year ago, when I did my diatribe on Reddit, I was like, you know what? I'll defend his death. I'll defend narratively his death, because I feel like if they needed to say goodbye to him, you know, for whatever reasons, if they needed to say goodbye to him, I feel like he made the decision. They had a close-up of him looking. He knew what he was doing. And he went out in a blaze of glory. And by the way, not to be like the girl who's like, I told you, on Live Journal a week ago, I'm like, if he's going down, it's going to be in a blaze of glory.
Well, I think that was part of the problem with last year was people were very upset that he was just a victim, that he was just...
I think that's an interesting point, though, and we should talk about that. There were a few asks in today, or maybe it was just one, but saying, what was the point of him dying in that way? We already knew that he was a hero. We already knew he would sacrifice himself for his country, and Ashley and I were talking about that. I think I was the one who ultimately ended up responding to that. But I said...
You did.
I said, yes, we did know. We already knew that he was a hero. We knew that he would have done this. His death didn't need to be a moment of revelation. We didn't need to learn something new about his character. I think it confirmed what we always know, which is that he was a hero. First and foremost, and he would have sacrificed himself, first of all, for Carrie and for the symbol of, and for the symbol of the country that he loved and had protected for the last 20 years of his life. And that, I mean, I thought that the death was anticlimactic and weirdly placed into the narrative, and the way that
in my mind was how early it occurred in the episode.
Yeah, like exactly. That's what I mean.
And minutes in.
I think the way that Claire was directed to play the reaction to it was somewhat off. We just rewatched it, and it felt a little bit.
We actually felt a little bit better about it.
Oh, I felt God. Better rewatching the episode than I did.
Not about his death, but about her response to it. Yeah.
I'm not gonna rant on and on, and you know I have that capacity. I was yes, that do. That reaction was
I
not.
Love you.
It was we. No, I'm sorry.
I think
I'm not. I'm not gonna rant on and on, but I'm sorry. We just fucking deserved a lot more.
I said that I quoted you on one of my Ask Answers today.
I think that's...
Go look.
No,
I better.
I think that's true. I was thinking about this a lot too today, and because we spent like 3 hours in the car driving back from Chicago to Madison, and
this was all we talked about. Anyway.
Through torrential downpour, by the way. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. All weekend, and then today was torrential downpour.
Yes, it was gorgeous. We had a perfect fucking weekend. And then as soon as last night happened...
Thunderstorms. I shit you not, this is what it was. Anyways.
So Peter Quinn dies and thunderstorms come out.
Exactly.
I think that
Mother Nature was not happy.
So I've not yet formulated a very succinct kind of way to talk about this, and
there's no succinct
people way probably I think to some respects people don't even give a shit what I have to say about Peter Quinn.
I don't know, Sarah. I think your opinion over the years has been nuanced and complicated, but I think you kind of got there this year.
I do agree with you guys. I don't understand the decision in the context of certainly 512, and I think it crystallized again for me, and this is something like 1 hour after 512 aired, I wrote this thing that was, of course, very, very
controversial.
No, I don't think it was controversial. It was very Carrie-centric in its direction, and it was basically like the writers don't give a shit about Carrie Matheson's happiness. They don't care about her as a human person, like, integrated into society. Her value to them is as a vessel for whatever kind of twisted story they want to tell about America or what it's like in like the post 9/11 world. Like they don't care about her as like a character or a person. And realizing that, it was a revelation to me, but not like it was a revolutionary concept, because it's not like they had really made any an effort to disguise that. It was just like me projecting what I wanted onto the story. And then once I was like, oh, like they just don't give a shit, it made sense in the context of what they'd done in 512, because 512 was shocking for me too, that they would kill this character who loved Carrie so deeply. And at that time,
he loved her almost as much as you love her.
More, maybe.
And
I was making a joke, and you're just being like really serious.
I am, sorry.
Anyways, I reread that today, and first of all, what struck me is how fucking absurd it was that a whole season later, I could read this thing, and it fit basically exactly perfectly. Like everything was still true and still applied, which was just like it. Again, it felt like deja vu. It's like, haven't we done this before? And then I think too is another thing, and I think hindsight is 2020, and I answered like another ask today about this, but like someone was like, I wanted so badly for their love story to be one of hope. And I agree with you, Cynthia. They were telling a love story between them. There is, like, no fucking way that you can watch this show and be like, oh, it's just a friendship, or it's just, like a deep sort of, like, connected. No, they were telling a love story. And if they try to play like they weren't, then they're being blatantly
disingenuous.
Yeah, they're just blatantly lying. Like, there were multiple points, and I listed them out throughout this season, throughout the season before, the season before that, the season before that, the season before that. Five seasons of them portraying this as a love story. Like, if I rattled the list off, we'd be here for the next 10 minutes. There's no way around that. They were telling a love story. I think that there is a way that you can watch it and read it as one that's hopeful, and what they did is they twisted it around and they turned it into one that was tragic. And that kind of hit me today, that they were telling a tragedy about them, and that was painful for me to think about.
Okay, I have two things to say. First of all, everyone who is interested in happiness and love and sweetness, Sarah
should find another show.
No, yeah,
should find another fucking show.
Sorry. Yes, well, no, that's true. Yes.
Yes. And we actually had a conversation about this earlier. But Sarah, our green penning Sarah,
wants to write something fluffy.
I said with maybe.
Harry and Quinn.
I said maybe.
So we were talking. Didn't have any ideas?
We were
so
talking.
If you have ideas, please send them to her. It's greenpens@livejournal.com.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, and what's like a fluffy thing that I could write? Like,
yeah, I had no idea right now because I'm in like a very dark place. But Sarah really wants to try to write fluff.
Not fluff, but just not something that like makes you want to die.
That's as opposed to all of your other stories.
Yes, as opposed to all of the other ones.
But the other thing that just occurred to me right now when you were talking about it was the reference that they made in the prison to Dar's classics fellow boyfriend, whatever. They could have picked a zillion majors. Classics is really interesting, though, because of the scope of tragedy that these classics scholars and, like, the writing that they did like Sophocles, we're talking Euripides, we're talking, I don't know, that's all I can think of right now.
There's a lot of messed up shit in classics.
But like, we're talking about Oedipus and Antigone and the Bacchae and all of these things that are just so sad, but start out very hopeful. I mean, Oedipus the King starts out very hopefully, and so does Antigone, and so does.
Are we giving Gonza any credit for knowing anything about classics? Isn't he
I am giving Gonza credit for being a fucking nerd who thinks he's above it all, and I think that's what classics majors are.
You know what? We made a promise. Sarah and I at least made a promise that I wasn't going to go on a Gonza rage.
No Gonza ranting.
And I'm not.
I'm not ranting about classics.
I think it's a smart show. I think it's always been a smart show. I don't think they write it or direct it or film it. Casually, I think the entire show, I had a moment today where I was like, you know what I really want? What I really, 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 really want is I want to know that Rupert wanted out. And I know that's aside from our discussion, and it's way aside from Greek tragedy. but like, I really want to know that Rupert wanted out, because it would actually crystallize kind of like a narrative, right? Like he found it in himself to have one more year, but he was not interested in taking Peter Quinn through the story. And that would be okay with me, because I have so much faith in these writers and these directors for creating such a smart show, that to just decide that this made sense in this way. And again, I'm not going on Gonza rage, because I think it's unproductive and not necessary, but I don't know.
My feeling is that, and Ashley and I read all of Rupert Quinn's interviews today, and based on what he said, this was a decision that came from the writer's room, not from him personally. And we were both actually surprised at the level of frankness that was included in those interviews.
He has been frank.
Very surprised at actually what he said about the Carrie Quinn relationship. But he did vocalize something that I think is interesting, which is that for the past two seasons, Quinn has been repeatedly, you know, tortured, injured, shot, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, he was in a very dark place. And I'm not... This is hard for me to say, because I love this show so deeply, and I hold the writers in sort of... I respect them a lot. I respect the people that work on this show. For whatever reason, they've decided that tragedy and darkness equals artistic, like, merit.
Right.
Which is puzzling, because that's definitely not a direction that, like, that's just not what the first 3.5-4 seasons of the show were at all. I don't know what's happening right there, right now. And actually, something that's kind of interesting is, so goes Quinn, so goes the show. Like, the minute that Quinn started to be tortured and, you know, just kind of emotionally brutalized is when the show got very, very, very dark. Like, the level of kind of what they've done to Carrie throughout the seasons, I think you could probably argue has stayed relatively even and static in terms of how she's been manipulated and what she's had to go through. Like, cumulatively, it's horrible and it's really shitty, but, like, just sort of regularly, I don't know about that. But the more that Quinn has been brutalized and beaten, the darker this show has become, which kind of suggests that Quinn's story took on in a interesting sense. I mean, I definitely think he became the moral compass of the show, and he became, in a way, kind of like the heartbeat of the show.
Yeah.
Which makes this,
which is crazy,
all the more baffling. Yeah. But
like, you take out the heartbeat and like the show, like, why?
I think that they didn't know how to write Quinn unless to make him brutalized and injured and tortured. And they Rupert was like,
yeah.
And what Rupert said was, to continue on in this way would have been sadistic, and I feel a relief for him. And I think Cynthia's right. He did go out heroically. I didn't think it was climactic in the true sense of the word, but
the opposite of that. It was anticlimactic. It's a word.
He had a heroic ending, and I know it's no small comfort to people, but I do think he had a heroic ending, and I think that he was immensely valuable to the show. He was immensely valuable, and I, Sarah, someone who channels Carrie and someone who has channeled Carrie for the past 5+ years of watching the show, I don't know what comes next. And I think that speaks volumes in that I am not sure that this show...
How did you, Sarah, feel after season 3?
No, but wait. Can Sarah finish that sentence? I don't know how the show...
Oh, I don't know what comes next for the show. I am not sure what they're going to do, because they need more than Carrie and Saul.
Okay.
Right. And my question, I'm sorry for interrupting,
it's okay,
was how did you feel post season 3?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That
that's
is a good question. Because I don't, no one has the, at least I don't have the wherewithal to talk about Brody comparisons. I'm just too fucking exhausted to do it. But like, it's the same old shit. It's the same old shit. Do we need her having another season of grieving someone she loved? Like,
yeah.
I literally was like, really? Like, do we have to have her going cold again?
I don't think that's necessarily what season 7 is going to be like, but I do think that that is her default grieving mode, is to just shut herself off to the world and go into that, like 1,000 miles a minute kind of thing, like, which is what Saul said. Anyways, back to Ashley's question. After season 3, so season 3 was interesting, because from the beginning of season 3, and the blog has existed from the beginning, or actually pre-season 3 onward. So I started it right before they began to film season 3. Very, very sure that this would be the last for Brody. It was, I think, a surprise that he survived season 2. I don't remember when it was revealed that he, like, wouldn't be in all of the episodes, probably at the TCAs that summer. So I was like, okay, he's definitely going to fucking die. And that was different, because that was an entire season of preparing myself and preparing the people who read the blog for this thing that I felt to be certain, that he was going to die. And it had narrative support. Like, there was narrative support that Brody was about to meet his end. And I think the way even that they wrote him that season was very, it was very obvious to me. And probably it was kind of like a feedback loop, in that I thought it was going to happen, and so I looked for more reasons why it was going to happen, and therefore, like, I thought it would happen more. When Brody died, That was interesting because back then there was a very large contingent of people who watched just for Brody. And I think the way that they felt then is the way that the people who watch for Quinn feel now. And there was also a large contingent of people, myself included, who were like, it was a good end for him. I thought that it had closure, and I'm ready to see what comes next. Like, I'm ready to see what this new incarnation of the show looks like. Cause up to that point, the show had just been that. It had just been Carrie and Brody, basically. There were a lot of people then who were ready to see that and were, I think there were a lot of people who were happy that he died. There were people, I fell into the middle. I wasn't happy that he died or celebrating his death, but I also wasn't heartbroken. I thought that his end was beautiful and deserved, and I thought that they sent his character out in a fitting way. And definitely the reaction that occurred after that episode in my memory doesn't compare to what's happening now, but it could just be like a recency effect. It was a very long time ago and I don't remember.
But I feel like, I watched seasons 1 through 3 in real time, and I feel like everyone kind of knew. I don't know, maybe it was just me, but I feel like everyone was kind of expecting, we knew, I think there was PR around it.
No, that's true.
We were all super expecting a death.
Yes, a lot of people expected it. Like, it was very much like, if that didn't happen, probably the season would have been seen as a failure by a large majority of people. But there was a proportion of people who were watching who were in denial and remained in denial for like at least a year.
Which is a contrast, but I feel like that's such a contrast to now, right? So
I don't think it's a contrast to what happened after 5/12. Because
okay, but let's not talk about the, we can talk about 5/12 if we want, but I think the level of grief is because it didn't feel like he was, like, that's what I want to talk about, is because we're talking about 6/12. I think 5/12 is interesting and we can go back to it, but I think if we're going to talk about this episode and Homeland going forward, it didn't feel like, leaving aside PR and the fact that the actors weren't actually that shady, actually they were they kind of told us, but leaving aside all of that, I just don't think most of us expected what we, it just didn't feel like that was what was happening, and it didn't feel right. It didn't, like, to me at least, it doesn't feel right for either one of them. It doesn't feel like a story. Brody and Carrie to me felt like a story you could get your arms around. Like, there was definite tragedy around it. It was super Homelandian. But they, you know, they kind of experienced a certain kind of love that was deep and important and complicated and fucked up, but it was explored, and it was, I don't know, it just felt really, really, if that relationship felt like they gave it a credence for which I just don't feel like Carrie Quinn, and maybe that's what they're trying to say, is that it's some special thing that's important because it wasn't explored. But to me, it just feels unbelievably untold, and I
feel like that was their point.
I feel like I've taken enough English literature courses that maybe that was the point. But I think that point would have been better made in 5/12. To Sarah's point,
I agree.
Yes. Like, we're all 1,000% on the same page that none of this makes sense.
Because,
because 5/12 happened and it exists, this doesn't make sense.
Like, literally, we just finished season 6. Carrie has lost very, very honest, true loves in 3 of them, because you count 5/12. which I do, because we all thought he was gone. That was how we ended season 5. But I think that their point, which I still think is bullshit, sort of fancy Princeton dude storytelling, was that their love, was it maybe too pure for this world, or was it just something that they missed out on? But it's, like, regardless, it was never...
I think, so my feeling when I there were two points as we were just rewatching the episode where the lens was on Carrie. So the first was in the car after she sees Quinn, yes, and Quinn saying, you know, is he dead? What was his name? Peter Quinn, blah, blah. The camera trains in on her, and the look on her face is one to me that's like, I just fucked this up, like, irrevocably, basically. And then the other moment was as she was looking through the photos in the book, which was very upsetting, and I began to cry as we were rewatching it. And she gets to the photo of her, and maybe this is just me being a Carrie defender and someone who views the show through her lens. I think people were like, oh, okay, that's when she really starts to cry, is like when she sees the picture of herself. But I think it hits her in that point, like, he carried a picture around of her seemingly everywhere he went. He took it off to war with him. He took it to Berlin.
Of his like everything else is pictures of his children.
I think what she came to realize is how deeply and how much and how purely he really did love her. And this realization of, I have lost him. I lost him. And
I do think it's bullshit. Like, if I'm going to call out Homeland on using female deaths to their man pain, I'm going to have to call out Homeland on using male deaths to further Carrie pain. Because it was very much like she was, his death was not about him or about America. It was about her.
I disagree with that.
She is the protagonist. It's fine. It's to be expected. But his death did not get the proper... He did not get a decent send-off at all. He was just...
But I don't think that's because the death was about Carrie. I don't think that's because...
Everything in the show is about Carrie.
Right. I don't think that the reason he didn't get a proper send-off is because of Carrie. I think it's because the writers didn't feel the need to give him a... I don't know. Like, they didn't, like, the way that...
They already did it.
They couldn't even get the right copy of Great Expectations, for fuck's sake.
Really? I was wondering that, actually.
No, like, someone brought that up in an ask. I noticed it right away. Anyone that channels Quinn is like, my copy of Great Expectations from fucking high school was the one he had. Like, whatever freaking publisher publishes the one with the black and the, like, whatever. And I was like, really? You couldn't even get that right, guys. Like, it just felt so fucking disrespectful. And actually, I will say, her looking at those pictures, and I did kind of a quasi-defense of Carrie, which is hard for me on an ask today, because I was like, someone was like, why was there not a memorial service? And I was like, well, first of all, because he never wanted one. We know that from the letter. But number two, because his memorial service was her looking through the photos.
But that's bullshit, because it makes
It was like, what is a memorial service? A memorial service
memorial
is paying
services
tribute.
Are about the
living.
Yes, they are about the people who have survived more than they're about.
But
the
we survived. We fucking survived this. We deserved a fucking memorial.
I love how Ashley's going all Cynthia right now.
I disagree. I disagree that, I mean, This is me where I'm just
You're
like...
You're not going, Cynthia, look, this so somebody is, needs to.
This is the point where I just have to be very typical Sarah and say that's not the... That is not the story that they're telling. Or that's not the type
well,
of story
no
that
shit.
They're telling. I'm just
you
saying that it's like...
512.
I
love you, Sarah.
I agree he wouldn't have won at the memorial. I agree he would not have won at the memorial. I think looking at the pictures was... For her, that was... Is the moment for her when she realizes... Truly, how deeply he loved her. I think it crystallizes for her because she's put up this wall and this kind of shield around her since the death. Let me finish. and it's a moment where she can like sit in that pain and that grief and that regret. I think that there's a lot of actual like regret playing in that scene, which is that she had that shot. And she continually turned him down, and now he's gone. And it calls back to scenes previously in the series where Carrie, you know, when she said, "I'm gonna be alone my whole life," and at that point, it seemed more about like her job and her profession and possibly her bipolar disorder, and now it feels kind of like this, like self-fulfilling.
It just feels like
it feels
I guess so. I'm crying again, but to me, it feels like unearned. Like, do you know, like, in the sense that, like, we followed Carrie, right? Like, we followed her for 6 years, and we trust. I actually do really, of all the arcs, the ones that feel the most authentic and genuine are the ones that she's been on around her bipolar, around her need for love, around her learning to love. And this one, the first half of the season was very much, I actually bought it. Like, it was authentic. It was very much about her needing to understand selfless love and guilt combined with whatever her thing was with Quinn, but it felt earned and important for Carrie. And what I don't understand about the last half of the season and the way they sent him out for me was for her, actually, Sarah, because I mean, this is the girl we're following, right? Is that I give Carrie more credit, and that's from somebody who's not a huge Carrie person. I gave her more credit than I gave. 6/11 is interesting to think about, right? At the doorway on 6/11, when she said it was always more about that. I don't know. It felt. You know, at least with Carrie and Brody, she said, "You know, I think I was put on this planet, you know, to know you." And, you know, we just never got anything even close to that with these two. And I'm sorry, I think it's worthy of tears. And I think it was piss poor writing. I really do.
I agree. First of all, I think that it was poor writing. Second of all, I think that it is, for a television show, it really asks us to suspend our disbelief to an insane extent that Carrie would respond to just Quinn in general over the season in this way. Sarah just rolled her eyes at me.
I did not roll my eyes.
She did. She looked up and the eyes went over. But
I hope also, everyone listening knows that Sarah and Ashley are in the same room.
We started this out.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm listening.
So the other thing is, you said it's piss poor writing with regard to the way they sent off Brody versus the way they sent off Quinn. And I think that the writers, to some extent, are so fucking arrogant that they feel like, we showed it all, we don't need to tell you. And there's a really big deal in theater and writing with in plays, which is showing versus telling. And that's the director's job, and I don't think it was done very well this season by any of the directors, at least not consistently, showing what Quinn meant to Carrie.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
So I have a few points. I think
except that, for the Y scene. The Y scene was fantastic.
The Y scene was fucking beautiful. And
the Y scene was beautiful and can be interpreted as a part of a love story that's full of hope versus a part of a tragic love story. I think it's interesting what you're saying. A tragic
love story can still be filled with hope.
But, okay.
Brody and Carrie were a tragic love story filled with hope.
Like, yeah, this is so. I have a point about this. Carrie and Brody were criticized
up, down, backwards, and forward.
Look, this is my point about Carrie and Brody versus Carrie and Quinn. And I ultimately, as much as we have kind of beat that drum throughout the season of like, what if they're reverse engineering, blah, blah, blah. And we've talked about a lot of the parallels that exist between those two relationships. It was very clear from the beginning that Carrie and Brody was a doomed romance. There were no illusions about that.
Agreed.
Zero illusions.
Agreed.
From the very beginning, you were like, this is fucked up. I'm intrigued and engaged and like, this is interesting to me. But you were like, this is doomed. Like, the writing was on the wall from the very beginning. Yes. And so I think what allowed them to say things like, I believe I was put on this earth for...
Was because they knew.
Was because...
knew.
It was almost like they were saying it with a wink-wink, because my interpretation actually of that scene is that it's like the writers poking fun at Carrie for being so earnest about this love that they knew in 20 minutes he was going to die. The audience knew he was about to die. Like, I felt actually a lot throughout that relationship that they were kind of putting or like propping Carrie up or propping the two of them up in order to whack them down. Like, there's this
really?
Very...
Really? Because can I just interrupt you really quickly? Really, I want to hear your though. Point. But I really, really thought, and I've rewatched that scene weirdly because I'm not a huge Brody person. I'm not a Brody hater, but I actually thought it was a beautiful piece of television, and I get that the critics didn't like it. I thought Damien and Claire in particular rocked it out, and I get that they gave them that because they knew he was going to die, which makes me even more weirded out about 612. Like, guys, you knew you were going to kill Quinn, and you couldn't fucking give us anything. And like, there was, yeah. We got a fucking monkey. We got a monkey scene. We got a monkey scene. Thanks, guys.
You're not wrong at all. That's my interpretation of that scene and of actually previous times throughout the latter half of season three, is that they were giving us all sorts of signs in the narrative and the story through dialogue or otherwise that were like, Carrie and Brody are doomed and they're both delusional people. Carrie especially. Like, when she talks about, like, have you thought about, like, what's going to happen when we get back to the States? And he's like, no, like, I honestly haven't thought about it. And she's like, I've thought about it. And there was, like, a point 2 and 3:10 when she's like, it's a fantasy in regards to their... journey together. Like they were very actually kind of blatant about the fact that this was doomed and delusional. They were not about the Carrie Quinn relationship, I don't think. Like, I was able to interpret the signs of the Carrie Brody relationship of being like, this is doomed and this is delusional, and was not able to interpret the signs of the Carrie Quinn relationship.
That's the point, right? Doesn't good writing...
Yes, that is the point. That's the point, is that they didn't do it in a way... Like, if they had done that, it might be a different story than where we are tonight. The other thing that I think is... It's kind of an aside, but it's also something that I return back to because it feels somehow relevant, is the writers, and Alex Gons especially... Alex Gonza, for whatever reason, was, like, deeply committed to the Carrie Brody relationship. and, like, I think loved telling that story and got dragged through the mud by the critics for it. And they told a very, especially in season two, they very earnestly told the story of that romance between them, even though it was tragic. They were very overt about the romance angles in it, and they showed a kiss, they showed sex, they showed all of that stuff, and you know, they talked about it being love or blah 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 whatever. And I think that was received very poorly by the critics. We know that he reads the critics, even if he says he doesn't, we know that he does. And I think that really did spook him from trying to, from like portraying a relationship similar to like to that. I think that's something that we have to at least consider as to like, why didn't they get kind of what they gave Kerry Brody? Well, I think that they were frightened of it. And the people in that writer's room is a bunch of men. There were no women in the writer's room this year at all, except for Charlotte. I guess there's Charlotte there, but
she was only,
besides that, there's
she was the only woman left.
There's no one there. And we saw at Paley in 2015, they were talking about the character relationship. They said, how many of you didn't want to see it? And like basically everyone except for Alex Gonza, Claire, and Meredith Steen raised their hands, including the fucking composer, including Sean Gallery, raised his hand and said, I didn't want to see that. And they, for some reason or another, I think, believe maybe it's like beneath prestige or whatever, but what's so infuriating is that at the same time as them believing that, they still give you these moments and these kernels that bait you on a little bit. And I understand people who feel like they were lied to and cheated, because I think that is that's a totally reasonable way to feel after four seasons of this.
I have three topics to bring up now in the course of you and Cynthia talking. First of all, Sean Callery, according to one of our most talented writers in the fandom, Neverending Story, at one point during this episode used the theme that is widely considered to be the Kerry Brody theme.
That, so
of course that's he an, did. That's unsurprising.
I know. I just wanted to bring that up, but I need more information on it, and we will do.
No, but Ness is a musician. I'm sure she's got a
musician. Right, exactly. So she and I will work on something coming up. Second of all, I find it interesting, and I thought about this as Sarah was talking about the purity of the Kerry Quinn relationship, in that it was never consummated. It's a very religious thing. Like, the Kerry Brody relationship was sinful in so many ways. He was married. They were having premarital sex. Like, they were all, like, he was...
There were
all kinds of things. But the Kerry Quinn relationship was, in so many ways, incredibly pure. And they never, at any point in the 4 years that we knew them... 4 years? Yeah. In the 4 years that we knew them, ever destroyed that. Third of all, you can address all this later, but I was thinking when we were watching the episode that Dar in prison is representing Alex Gonza. No, okay. I am looking at the transcript right now, and things that he said were...
I feel like the last few episodes, there's been a lot of weird, like, fandom conversation going on in the writing. I really, really do. And I don't normally leap on that shit, but there's been a lot of weird...
In this, when I was watching it with Sarah tonight, rewatching it, Dar says things like, it was never my intention for things to turn so dark.
Yeah.
And he said that.
I looked on that right away. I noticed it right away.
Wow. He said what I did was unforgivable, Saul, but I'm not sure it was wrong.
This is weird shit. Like, if this is him, like, channeling himself via Dar, this character that he turned from, like, in Shades of Grey to, like,
extremely dark and villainous and, like, abusing minors, like, that's fucking weird.
Well, I don't know. Or you can just think it's Princeton freaking English literature Hollywood hubris. Like, I don't want to go on Ganser rage, but... Ashley's line, which, by the way, there are at least three other lines this season, and I have never done this in previous seasons. There are at least three or four lines this season where I was like, dude, this feels like the X-Files all over again, which, by the way, they used to talk to the fandom all the time. Like, and yeah. I've never gotten that from the show before, but when Dar said that, I was like, thanks, guys. Like, it was never my intention for things to get this dark. There's no reason why Dar needed to say that. Like, exactly. They could have written all sorts of shit. They could have written all sorts of shit for Dar.
Like, I didn't notice this during the original watching because, to be clear, I had a lot of alcohol. But I turned to Sarah during our rewatch and I said... what the fuck? This is Ganza talking through Dara Dahl. He wrote the fucking other
thing
episode.
The other thing he said was, accentuate the positive, if you would, Saul.
Right?
That's the last thing he said, I think, to him.
Like, it is completely fucked up. And like I said this in an ask earlier, I spent... much of the season telling you guys what I thought was going to happen. And now that it's happened, I'm in more denial than anybody.
Well, it should be pointed out that, Sarah's officially the youngest person on the blog, but the second youngest is you. But the second youngest, Ashley, and the eldest, who is Lore, both have been saying he's going to die. Privately and kind of dramatically and not really, they're like, no, he's probably going to die, but no, he won't really die, like, in the way that you do, because no one really wanted to believe it.
Well, because, like, I understood, based on what they were telling me and based on my previous experience with these writers, what they were doing, but simultaneously, it didn't fucking make any fucking sense. And it still makes no sense to me, and I'm still in that space.
Cynthia wanted to talk about the importance of Peter Quinn.
He was incredibly important.
I don't know. I really...
I think we've discussed how incredibly important and valuable he was to the show. I talked about the heartbeat of it. I said heartbeat.
You did, you said.
I talked about me not being sure where they go from here. If there's more to say about him, we can continue talking or we can move on because it's already been almost an hour and a half.
I think Peter Quinn was genuinely 100,050% too good for this fucking show. I love Carrie. I love everything about this show, but I think that Peter Quinn was just a little above. And I think that Cynthia has made this point in her fan fiction, particularly in her Christmas fic, where Quinn was just too much for this show. Like, he was a contradiction insofar as he was an assassin with a moral code that is more solid than any of ours.
Well, or more solid than Carrie's, right?
I think more than any of us. I think that he was very, like,
more solid than Carrie's for sure. Rupert made that point in a few of his interviews.
But I think that none of us have ever been tested in that way.
It doesn't have to be a conversation of, like, what was he the most moral human being that ever existed on this planet.
Why not have that conversation? Like, I actually, like, you know, a separate piece. Like, there's plenty. If you want to talk about, like, the Princeton guys, you want to talk with the Princeton guys and they're, like, you know, go to Princeton and major in English Lit. Like, if you don't think they're thinking about, you know, Phineas and a separate piece. And, like, there's always, it's like a... It's a trope in English literature to have the Christ-like figure who was better than the world could understand or take. And I don't think it's a problem to fucking talk about that. In fact,
I'm just saying, in the context of what this show and what Rupert's point was, what she said was that Carrie and Quinn had moral codes that were incompatible with each other. Okay.
Sorry? I was not following.
Did you read any of Rupert's interviews that were published today?
Did I?
Yeah, did you?
No, I read your guys's kind
of... Let me find the actual quote. So I'm not just paraphrasing.
What I said in my ask earlier was that Quinn, if he'd had an option, would have chosen to do the same thing for himself, but he never would have done the same thing for Carrie or to Carrie. And I think the reality that Carrie...
Yeah, I don't think he would have ever woken her up.
Way.
It's a false equivalence.
Yeah. An entire freaking huge blog who, you know, said that he...
Let me read the actual quote. Hold on.
But I don't believe for a single second he would have woken her up from a
coma. This is the question. So this is the question.
But they didn't even give us a Carrie Saul scene. Like, if you're going to pivot this relationship.
Let me just read it. So the question the interviewer said, Carrie and Quinn fans are bereft that the two of them will never get their happy ending. But let's face it, even if he had survived, there was really no shot of that happening, right? And this is what Rupert said. I totally empathize and understand the fans' disappointment because I know how beloved these two characters are and how the idea of them together makes so many people happy. But their respective moralities were explored thoroughly in the last two seasons, and Quinn's dissatisfaction with his own way of life suggested that he was in a position to question his own moral code. And that's a position of enormous integrity. Whereas there was a very telling moment in the penultimate episode this season where Quinn confronts Carrie with the reality, which is she woke a man up from a coma, risked his life to serve her own end, and doesn't really see why that's bad. And to me, that suggests a lack of accountability and self-examination, which means that Carrie's moral code is just not compatible with Quinn's. As I said before, I wanted him to find someone he could ultimately trust, and I don't think you can trust someone who would do that to you.
Fuck that.
What do you mean, fuck that?
I mean, I disagree because Quinn has always known what Carrie's priorities are.
That doesn't make them any more palatable, but I think my
palatable, but
my issue with that is we were rewatching. I was just like, because we like read the interviews this morning and then we rewatched it tonight, and I said he wasn't really like playing, like, even just thinking about it in hindsight, I'm not sure he was playing like he couldn't trust Carrie. I don't know. I guess I didn't get
that. You said that, but I guess my actual point is that Rupert is speaking from his own perspective, and we all know why Carrie woke him up, and we all know what the stakes were and what the deal was. And
I think it's an interesting perspective, actually.
No, yeah, I agree, but if the tables were turned, no, Quinn would have never woken up Carrie. Ever. Like, in a million, bazillion years, he would not have woken up Carrie. But I think that if Quinn had had a say in this current situation, that he would have said, yeah, totally, wake me up. It's the fact that Carrie made the decision for him that he wouldn't have made for her that is fucking with him.
Fucking with Rupert.
Fucking with Quinn and with Rupert to some extent, because it's the startling and very difficult realization that Carrie did not love Quinn in the same way that Quinn loved Carrie, but we already knew that, right? Guys, my fic is gonna have a happy ending, I promise.
Good. I don't know, guys. I don't feel like I don't feel like the narrative gave him justice as a character. I don't feel like I got really angry, and it wasn't Carrie. And there's been several asks about it, and critics brought it up too around her looking at herself and then breaking down. That's not actually what bothers me. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I know Carrie well enough that I kind of understand that. What bothered me is that they called back fucking season two with the Great Expectations book, which, by the way, is called, I'm going to start crying again, it was actually called Great Expectations, right? Like, what do Quinn fans have? Like, what are we all about? We always have these great expectations for Quinn. Like, it's actually, I feel like you want to talk about talking to the fandom? Like, I was like, Jesus Christ, they're bringing that shit back. The promo of the episode had, like, a season three callback, right? Like, mm-hmm. It just all was so weird. And then we have Julia, we have his backstory. We all kind of expected, many of us expected that they might have gone there. And it was just like, sorry. And I felt like that was really a communication. Like, I really, if you want to talk about talking to people who love this show, I feel like they were really saying, We know you had great expectations for this character. We know that you were talking about, that you understand his backstory. It is going to bed. And I guess I appreciate that they did it on some level. It just felt shallow. It felt super shallow in the context of 10 fucking minutes with the, like, child protective services in her house. Like, I'm like, really? We had to spend 7 minutes of this episode or something with, like, the child services person in her house, in which we didn't actually care, and we got 10 seconds of garbage bag filling and Great Expectations. It just always feels like a fucking dysfunctional problem with the writers. I'm sorry.
The thing with Quinn is everything they do feels like an afterthought.
Yeah, it feels like they're never confident in how to write
them. It's like they're always like, well, okay, we need to do this part. And that happened last year. That happened, I don't want to say it happened.
Well, yeah, Rupert, write the letter. Rupert, please write the letter to say goodbye to this character for whom a ton of people
like
love.
Like I said, if he had died in season five.
Okay, but the thing about, so the letter, like, don't you like the fact that Rupert, like, that Quinn's words were Rupert's words?
I don't mind that. I mean, I thought it was sort of lovely, but Gonza's owned the fact that he was just fucking tired. And so he was like, okay. Rupert, you want to write it? It really does, like Sarah, let's just like own it, because this is like our goodbye to Quinn, right? There will probably not be a lot of like Quinn discussion in the future. He was a character for whom I think they really struggled with, and I will never, ever, Sarah was saying earlier, she was saying
like over and over and over and over again in the car, they did not know how to write Quinn. And I said to Sarah at one point on our trip, you should have hired Cynthia to write Quinn.
I don't think they knew
how to integrate Quinn into this story in a way that they wanted to do. And this does go back to what's the story that the writers are wanting to tell. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they, well, ironically, I really do think they wanted to tell a story about, like, a soldier who's returned back from war. And I've made clear that I think that it wasn't any kind of, like, revenge against Quinn or anything like that. I think that they realized conveniently he was a vessel for that story that they'd been mm-hmm. pining to tell for many years. But I don't think that they understood how to write Quinn probably in the way that viewers wanted him to be written, which is they wanted to watch Quinn 1.0. They wanted to watch Quinn of season three, season four, the guy who saves the embassy in season four. They want to watch the guy who's who they wanted to watch. And for some reason or another, from, you know, basically the past two seasons, they didn't do that. And I think that they weirdly wrote themselves into a corner of their, like, own making. Or it's just, like, they kind of, like, did it by accident. It's very weird.
Kind of what they were creating.
I don't think they understood. I don't think they understood the power and the sway.
Assholes, the people. So, one of us has been
Ashley, get closer to the microphone.
One of us has been to Harvard, and the other one has been to Harvard Square a whole fucking lot.
I had a very petulant ask. I'm like, Harvard, meet Princeton, jerks.
I'm going to fast like, right now as you guys argue, and I'm just, it's heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching. It's like,
I think it's an okay discussion to have about
be staying awake, like, to answer them.
But I think it's an okay discussion to have, and I mean we can you know wind it up. But I think it's an okay discussion to have around why was there a struggle? I mean, why was there a struggle to write Peter Quinn? Why was there a
struggle? I think it's possible that they are infatuated with this idea that suffering equals art. Which, by the way, is something I feel like I have said on this podcast, not with you guys, but
I have such suffering a fucking is hard art. Time with that because well, art is
let me
like,
finish. Okay, let me finish. Gonna... So I think that they, for some reason or another, think suffering is art, and mm-hmm. that totally fucking explains why every season gets more and more bleak and more unbearably dark, and. Perhaps they thought, I don't know, maybe Quinn was an interesting character in that I felt for the first few seasons of his existence on the show was kind of one note. It was mm-hmm. very...
I would agree.
Stereotypical action hero plus pining for Carrie. Like, he had two modes. like that was it. And in season four, they added more layers and more complexity, and especially kind of in how he interacted with Carrie in her drunk queen days. In season five, they tried to separate him from Carrie and give him his own storyline. In my opinion, unsuccessfully. It was kind of a fucking mess, the whole Tarasol thing. In season six, I was actually very fascinated and really interested in the story that they told with him. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I found it really interesting. I think that they tried to, I don't know. I don't know if I have like a magic bullet sort of explanation, but I think that they struggled with how to write a character who could be more than stereotypical action hero and pining for Carrie, even though Rupert added lots of shades to the character that made they that. Sure did. That made that a welcome development. Like, we wanted to see more of him. We wanted to see more than just kind of those two modes. And Rupert did a lot of that through his own acting, even when the writing didn't necessarily give it to him. And I also think they really struggled. I think they really struggled with writing Quinn as his own entity. Perhaps separate from Carrie, because I think they were terrified of writing another earnest love story between them, even though at times that's what they did in a somewhat baiting way. I think they really struggled with that, and maybe that goes back to their sort of learned uneasiness and skittishness mm-hmm. in regards to romance. Other than that, I don't know. I don't know why.
This fucking TV show. Sorry, I'm not close to the microphone. This fucking TV show.
I think that was really well said, Sarah. And you know
good,
me.
Good, I felt like that was a rambly answer.
No, I would jump on anything. I am going to cry again because it's sort of like it's just like a goodbye, right? Like, I mean, if this podcast is nothing else, it's just a goodbye to a character that was really loved, and I struggled today because I was like, I would have rather have had season six and have him go out this way than season five and have him go out that way, because I feel like it's more earned narratively this year, in the sense that
he died this year.
No, it's more earned, like his struggles this year and his death this year feels a little bit more understandable in context, and the love that they shared, however unexplored, felt more resonant. And I guess season five was so weird, like it was so dislocated on some level that this year I felt like it was like that had a name and a place, and he was for sure disturbed and a mess, but this year his death felt more heroic and important. And last year it just felt like, dude, you got kidnapped by a terrorist cell and you threw him and you gave him some torture porn and then you kept him horizontal for three episodes and then you had the actor write a nice letter and goodbye. Whereas this year it felt like, I feel like there was authentic love for the character. I just still, what I'm left with after all of this justification for feeling better versus 512 is that he was a character for whom they didn't quite understand how to write. And I don't understand why they can't figure out a way to write love for Carrie. But I think that if we were going to come down to anything.
Assistant writer, Cynthia's really fucking good at writing Peter Quinn. So bring him back and then hire her.
The reason why they don't know how to write love for Carrie is because they literally don't give a shit about doing
that
for her. They don't give a fuck. If they gave a fuck, they would write I really feel like they would write it well. If they gave a fuck, they don't give a fuck.
It's a bunch of fucking dudes who want to.
And like, as much, I think, as much as you kind of say, okay, this is like a Leslie episode or whatever, you know.
Well, Leslie,
she's the director. She's given a script.
She's the one person.
But she's given a script. And if the script is everything, right? Like, you can only do so much with how am I going to direct the actors and how am I going to frame this and do this or that. Like, I truly don't think that they give a fuck about writing romance for Carrie. And it's kind of nihilistic to be like, the writers don't give a shit about her. But because it's just like, okay, then why am I watching?
I mean, what the fuck is the point of having a protagonist of a show if you don't give a goddamn fucking
I think it's that. Yeah. I think it's that, or they really, almost to an absurd degree, haven't read like market research in terms of why people are watching.
Nice.
Well, I could easily go on a ranting and raving mission on this because, you know, I'm a marketing girl, but
it's been almost 2 hours.
I shouldn't have said marketing. Sorry.
No, but I will say really briefly that the viewership for Homeland, and this can be verified anywhere, is really old.
Apparently, got a huge bump. Oh, sorry. Enough mind. Go ahead.
The viewership of this show is you want to know why there's so many old white dudes writing and acting on the show? It's got a really old viewership.
I'm just so fucking shit of
sick.
I've been drinking a good amount of alcohol because
she just said this is my last night instead of sick.
This is my last night of drinking alcohol for like months now. At least definitely until I hang out with Cynthia next.
I've been completely dry all evening, I'll have you all know.
Well, right. but when we're together. Anyway, the show is fucking unconscionable in so many ways.
Why are we watching it? Why do we watch it?
Because we are masochists.
Okay, have another drink. I have a last topic. I have a last focus topic. Okay. And we can do it quickly. I just want to say that, and, you know, listen, it's like, of course, like, Rupert Friend is easy on the eyes and all that stuff. But I think that there is something, and I don't want to, I think there was something that he brought to that role that, was really special, and I'm just like in this goodbye to Peter Quinn, you know, podcast. I just, you know, I actually think it's just more than his like cheekbones and his various like and his various like navy shirts and his hair and his wigs. Like I think that there was something incredibly special about what that actor brought to that role, And I don't know, like, I think on some level, I think at the end of the day, he, I think what moved him, and this happens once in a while, it doesn't happen that often with actors, right? Like, once in a while, like, someone's role, and it's easier when they're, like, the lead, but it doesn't need to be the lead, just transfixes people like on some level. And I think that he was so winning on somehow, like in some level, there's something so winning. Yeah, winning, like in the sense that like that's the reason people joke about him being like the next James Bond. What is James Bond if nothing else? Like I just think he brought something to that that actually like engendered hope. Like he's sort of like a hopeful kind of actor. Like I've seen him in most things he's done. It's hard to feel doomed when you watch Rupert Friend, and maybe that's why they weren't quite sure, because I can watch freaking Claire Danes any day of the week and think that the world could end tomorrow, but I wasn't actually convinced that they would do that with him. And I think I that's think because
I was gonna say what, yeah. I really loved where I thought you were kind of taking the topic was like what did he bring to the role that really like affected you? You listed off a lot of really good reasons. He did have a winningness and it reminded me, in New Carsmel, which was the first episode that Quinn is in, there's this moment when Carrie receives the call from Brody and she's about to go off to the hotel and she has the two of them sitting there in the like control room or whatever. And she's like, oh man, like I'm nervous. And he looks over to her and he smiles and he says, I'm not, you're good. And he smiles. And I always felt like the way that Quinn smiled was really sad, and betrayed some inner pain that he had. Like whenever he smiled specifically at Carrie, he seemed in some way pained. And I think what was really interesting about him is on the exterior, he was this really cool and collected guy. Like you saw sort of shades of that in this episode when he's in the crowd and he's looking up at like the people on the roof, and you can tell like the different pieces of his brain. Like he was really fucking smart and really good at what he did. And but there was this like inner vulnerability to him that made him more just more complex than that, and I think more humid and kind of more lived in. That was really interesting to me to watch. And I think that that's something that is not written in the script. I think that's something that he brought to the role on his own, and that then became integrated into who the character was. And I'll really miss that. And I just turned 22. I was wondering what to do. The closer they came, the more those feelings grew. Thank you.
rifle in my arms felt reassuring. He told me red means run, son. Numbers add up to nothing. But when that first shot hit the dark, I saw it coming. Raise a rifle to my eye. Never stop to wonder why. Then I saw black.